Live from the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, it's time to go deep on the two-tone blue with former Titans wideout Nate Washington and ESPN Titans reporter Teron Davenport. It's Nate and TD on Nashville's Sports Talk, ESPN, 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
All right. It's normally Freaky Fridays, but you know what? Today is going to be a thrilling Thursday. MTSU is in action tomorrow. So you know what? You get Nate and I tonight. Nate, what's good, partner?
You got it, TD. What's going on with you?
Oh, man, I'm chilling, and I got a blast from the past. You know that okay. Show I do called Talking with TD?
Yeah.
Well, I walk in the studio, and I see the original producer of Talking with TD, my guy Phil Grant. He and I, yo, let me tell you something. We did Talking with TD in a little small studio. He's the guy that got it started, man. So I'm hyped that I got my man in there working the buttons for me right here for this show, the Nate and TD show.
That's dope, man. As they say, y'all got it out the mud, huh?
Out the muscle, man. Let me tell you, from the muscle. Speaking of from the muscle, that 33-30 win, that was one that, yeah, from the muscle for sure. It was a tough win. They grinded it out. I want to start with Ryan Tannehill and just the way these guys are responding to him. I mean, first and foremost, getting up and saying "and one" after that touchdown to Adam Humphries. When you see a quarterback do that, what type of not motivation, but what type of love does that help develop for him?
It definitely instills confidence into your team. You know, you look at the group of guys, and you don't have the premier superstar full team full of guys. You don't have the guys that were your most attractive guys in the draft and all these other things. You have a team full of guys that have major potential, some guys that were able to fit the pieces of what this offense and this team was trying to accomplish. But when you have a guy like Ryan come in and give the swag and the will that he's given these guys, it gives them confidence. It gives them confidence to go out and play with a gunslinger that knows he's going to go out and not only give all that he has, but be accountable in his job and do everything he can to put these guys in a position to win. And not only is he going to do that, but along the way, he's going to have fun doing it.
Now, if you look at that throw, the 18-yard touchdown, when, right, as a receiver, when your quarterback puts the ball in a spot down the field and just says, I know he's going to go get it. I know that. What does that say? Like, what are you thinking? Like, how does that make you feel about your quarterback? What are you thinking when you have a guy that trusts you like that? Because I know in the past you've had that in a few different quarterbacks. Jake Locker, we talked about that the other day. So what does that do when he has that confidence in you?
That just shows the background of work that they've put in together. You get a look like that, you know, man-to-man coverage, low red zone, limited area that you're able to work in, limited space that you have to be accountable for. And you get that type of look with that type of play, a deep crossing route. And it's just an anticipation play. You know, I was impressed by the ability of both ends of Ryan trusting Adam and Adam knowing that, you know, it's time to get across the field and having the wherewithal to get in that, once again, as we spoke about last week, that cubbyhole area where, mm-hmm, there was going to be space and a void for him to be in against that man-to-man. No backside defender with a shorter route. And it was just a situation where Ryan definitely anticipated that throw. He kind of, as you say, stared down the barrel of a gun and knew that he was going to take a big shot. But just the ability to know, you know, to be on the same page with Adam, awesome play call by, you know, Art Smith, and knowing that they might be a man-to-man. And the deep cross was one of the difficult routes for a slot defender or a nickel guy, yep, to cover. You know, they have to be able to cover both the outbreaking route from the slot, but also be able to get all the way across the field on the crosser. And obviously he was chasing. And just to have the opportunity to see, you know, that space and that void for Ryan, and to know that if he could put that ball in that void, that Adam would soon be there, that's just a trust factor. Huge trust factor, shows that these guys have been putting in the work, shows that Arthur Smith did an excellent job of instilling the play calling of the red zone in that situation and knew that it was going to be an opportunity there to make a play versus man-to-man.
That's a lot of ground to cover, as you mentioned, on that cross-country type of crossing route. So you put a defense in stress when you do that. You mentioned the red zone. Question for you.
Yes.
Do you know what quarterback has the most passing touchdowns in the red zone this season?
I'm going to take a shot and go say Ryan Tannehill.
6 touchdowns in the red zone. 3 of them have gone to Jonnu Smith. He has connected with Corey Davis for one of them. That one to Humphreys. Michael Pruitt. I mean, these guys are really connecting and making it happen. When you look at that, just it spreading around like that, I liken it to a team like the Nuggets, the Denver Nuggets, or a team like the Warriors back in the day when basically their whole starting five, they were averaging 20 points. So what do you do? Like, how does that put stress on a defense?
Well, this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier when I was speaking about Ryan and his ability to instill the confidence in the guys, being that we don't have your big superstar names. You don't look at this team and you don't see a Julio Jones. You don't see a Amari Cooper. You don't see those major guys that a lot of offensive and a lot of offensive coaches and coordinators would love to run their passing game through. You see a group of guys, blue-collar guys, that are all willing to do whatever they have to in certain situations, whether it's screen, whether it's, you know, getting the ball to Jonnu. These are guys that definitely match each other's utilities to come out and create one gigantic offense. You know, this, I was excited, and we'll talk about that here in a minute, even about the opportunities that would be against the Minnesota Vikings, being that they play so much coverage with Khalif Raymond and the possibility of Cam Batson. These are opportunities for guys to come in and do things that match each other's game. Corey and Adam working together in this position right now with AJ being out. Jonnu's ability to be, you know, a playmaker at the tight end position is major. As we look across the NFL and you look at the tight end position, that is a tight end, is a position that is evolving. These guys are becoming more and more like regular receivers instead of guys that are putting their hand in the ground as a three-point stand and just blocking all day. It's not the same type of ball. You know, you want a receiver that can actually go out and wiggle and have agility just as a receiver to get open and do some amazing things. And we have that in Jonnu. So it's just in my opinion, this coaching staff and this front office has done an amazing job of going out and understanding that it was going to take a collective unit and not just one or two guys to come in and make this type of offense work. We have always talk about having a ground and pound style type of running back and an offense. And so to have these guys collectively put in each with their unique ability is going to definitely help this offense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then just to kind of put a bow around the victory over the Jaguars, as we said, it was one from the muscle. Jacksonville put up 480 yards of total offense. And let's call a spade, that pass defense was getting shredded. When you look at that short passing game, and when you look at Minshew, and I was very critical of Gardner Minshew a week ago, you know, before the game. But, hey, I came away like, you know what, this guy is actually he's a solid player. I'm not going to say he's great, but how did Minshew look to you just with some of those throws that he made?
Well, we spoke about this last week, and one of the things that I also alluded to at the time was just the coaching staff and the strategy of the Jacksonville Jaguars was obvious. You know, they want to get the ball out of his hands fast and eliminate the pass rush that we had, and they did an excellent job of that. I think the play calling definitely put him in position to make some plays quick. I think, you know, the receiving core did an amazing job of giving him an opportunity to place a ball in some places and make the plays that they were able to make. But, you know, all in all, the thing that I've seen and one of the things that I was scared about actually watching film prior to the game was his escapability. You know, you don't look at this guy and expect him to have the Lamar Jackson speed or the Kyle Murray escapability, but he does enough. He does enough at the right times. He never presses the envelope with it. He knows when to throw the ball away and when to try to make something with his legs. And that's the thing that impresses me. You get guys nowadays because – of the passing game is evolving. You know, everybody wants to put the ball in the air, but you know, you get a lot of guys that become systemized pocket quarterbacks, and that's all they're capable of doing. And a lot of teams can go out and strategize against that. But when you get a guy that's a dual threat, you know, you eliminate the pass game with maybe a two-man coverage, and you get underneath a lot of those routes and passing concepts. But here it is, you leave a wide open running lane for your quarterback, for the opposing team's quarterback. And he definitely showed up and made some plays with his legs late last week. And, you know, I see a huge ceiling for this guy. He definitely has some potential to continue to grow, being that he's a young guy, but definitely was impressed and definitely will continue to keep an eye on him and see how he continues to grow.
And just to kind of point out an example of what you were saying when it comes to making a play with his legs, early in that game, it was actually that first drive. It was 4th and 3. And I remember they were closing in on him, but he was able to squeak out to the left side, and he ended up scrambling for 3 yards. It should have been a sack, but he got the first down for them. So he does present that degree of elusiveness, escapability. I think he's a guy that is a good placeholder. I don't know that I would not take a guy like a Justin Fields or a Trevor Lawrence if I was Jacksonville, but the way that they're playing, they very well may put themselves out of contention to be able to get one of those top quarterbacks. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, TD. You look at their situation, and they're kind of stuck in a unique positive position. You got a guy that can go in and get the job done, but you obviously would want to stack some potential behind him and some guys that can definitely be the face of your franchise. But all in all, worst come to worst, I definitely see this guy being a solid option for you. You know, you look at the structure of their team. I think they also are set up, you know, with their passing game, as they don't have, you know, that one superstar guy, but a collective group of guys that are going to come in and aid and do what they must do to be accountable with their job. But, you know, you look at that team, man, and they're set up in a unique position. They have really a team full of underdogs that you really can do anything with. They can come in and they can get the job done, but you can definitely have an opportunity to stack some potential superstars behind them.
Yeah, and they have the firepower as far as the draft's concerned to be able to get some guys that way, because they'll be stacked up, being as though they traded all of their top players away, you know, for additional picks. But one of the guys that they got as an undrafted free agent was James Robinson. He had an outstanding game, 165 yards rushing for the team. He had 102 of them. Next week is going to be tough. You got Dalvin Cook, and we're going to go to a break, but when we come back, we need to get into Dalvin Cook a little bit, because he's actually one of the top running backs in the league. We'll be right back. Nate and TD. That's right. You hear Grand Poobah of Brand Nubian. Don't let it go to your head. And that's something that I think is a message this Titans locker room has to make sure they understand. You probably couldn't have a better 2-0 start from a stay grounded perspective. We talked about what the rushing attack did to the Titans last week, a buck 65. The Broncos were able to run the ball really well also. So I think when you look at those two games, one of the things that happened to a defensive coach is they allowed a team to have success running the ball. That's something that I'm sure irks Coach Vrabel. We got a spicy Mike Vrabel today, by the way, on his pressure. I get it, though. I get it. I mean, if there are some struggles stopping the run, and also not the level of explosiveness you want from the run game, a defensive coach is surely going to be upset. And I get that. But this week, daggum it. Dalvin Cook, man. What do you think of Dalvin Cook, Nate? What does he bring to the table?
Man, here's the thing, what you get with Dalvin. You get such explosion with strength, but when you look at him, you don't expect the speed that he has. You know, watching this guy on tape, watching this guy over the years, I think he's definitely one of the more underrated but acknowledged running backs of this NFL. You know, you look at the running back game in this NFL, and obviously, Zeke gets a lot of love. CMC gets a lot of love. you know, Gurley actually gets a lot of love, but people don't actually acknowledge Dalvin as much as they should. This guy runs with the full head of steam, has a short area quickness, and all to have all in all of that, you know, wrapped into the size that he has, you know, his body type doesn't match his unique physical ability with his speed and his agility. So it's amazing. You know, you look at this guy and sky's the limit with him in a game. You never know what's going to happen. You get teams that can go out, you know, and think that they're going to stop him for maybe under a 50-yard day. And here it is, he might give you a 150-yard day. So it's definitely going to be a test for this Titans defense. As you said, we've experienced a couple struggles here with these past couple games, 165 given up against Jacksonville alone, you know, and not to expect that with that team. But still, you know, it's just a situation when you look at the statistical line to look at, you know, that situation leading into facing such an extremely great back in Dalvin, you know, it's definitely something that they're going to have to be attentive to.
No doubt about it. And when you look at Dalvin Cook, you actually mentioned the power that he runs with. I implore anyone who has NFL Game Pass, go watch that Falcons game last year. And there was a time where he was running to the right and he just kind of lowered his shoulder and he released that hit stick on Deion Jones. He ran him over. So that's an example of the power that he has. But then you look at the footwork, and that's something else that's really impressive with him. That guy, he gets to the second level. He's Ginsu-like, you know, with those cuts that he's able to do. But he's still a guy that will make that one cut and get upfield when necessary, too. So he definitely brings the full package. I think it's also underrated what he does out of the backfield as a pass catcher. That's something you saw him do in Florida State. So this guy is definitely the total package. But here's the problem. The Vikings have not been able to maintain time of possession. If you look at the numbers, they're averaging just over a quarter time of possession per game, 20 minutes and 9 seconds. Teams are legitimately having the football 39 minutes and 50 seconds. You can't get the running game going when there's that much of an imbalance in time of possession.
Oh, definitely. You look at the balance of their team, and they're a lot like the Titans. They want to be successful off the run game, but unfortunately, when you look at the back end of it and you look at their pass attack, it just hasn't been there. Kirk Cousins hasn't played well. You know, Adam Thielen hasn't been the Adam Thielen that we've known of past. This year has kind of been difficult. And I expected these type of adjustments, especially with Stephon Diggs leaving. But unfortunately, they're going to have to find their way back through as well. You know, you miss a key point in your offense and he leaves, you know, it definitely makes everybody around have to adjust, including the run game, including your quarterback, and including the other star receiver that you may have played with. So you look at this team, and even with their unique ability to sustain an awesome run game with Dalvin, it's impossible to get a run going if you're not making the plays on the back end and making a splash face in the pass game. And that just has not been happening for them. You haven't seen much of Kyle Rudolph this year. He's been kind of absent in the past game, and it's given teams the ability to kind of stack that box, put an 8-man in that box, and kind of shut that run game down. So it's going to be a unique opportunity once again for this Titans defense to go out and hopefully stop that run game and see what they can do on the back end, trying to match up with Thielen and the rest of the guys that they have.
And one of the things that they love to do is go play action. So if you're not able to establish the run, the effectiveness of that is taken away. And, if there is one quarterback that really relies on play action, it's Kirk Cousins. And I know there was a lot of talk about Tannehill and how he was in the play action, and he does get better. But, man, Kirk Cousins really relies on that, even dating back to his days with the Washington football team. So when you look at Kirk Cousins, I'm not exactly someone who feels he checks the boxes, but I want to get your opinion on him as a quarterback, especially a guy that's getting paid that amount of money that he's getting.
Well, TD, I'll agree with you. He definitely doesn't check all the boxes to me either. You know, I think it's about when you look at these NFL teams, even with the coaches, the interchanging coaches that get, you know, fired or leave an organization and they just immediately get picked up. You know, you deal with a lot of teams, in my opinion, you deal with a lot of teams in the NFL that they look at their season as, you know, how can we get through? I think a lot of these organizations realize at the beginning of the season now, I think a lot of them realize that, you know, Super Bowl or Lombardi is just not in their making for that year. So they'll do or place guys in position that the best way they can to make it through with limited, you know, mess ups and put the best football product out there that they possibly can without reaching for a Lombardi knowing that they can't get it. And that's just kind of what Kirk Cousins reminds me of. He's a guy that's going to sustain your season. He's a guy that's going to go out and have a game that he can yell in the camera, and he did some great stuff in that one game. But as far as winning in the playoffs, as far as winning the Lombardi, as far as being top three, top five quarterbacks in the NFL and establishing your offense in that direction, I just don't see it. I don't see the possibility there with them. The potential is very limited. I think, as you said, with the Washington football team, even dating back to his days with the Washington football team, his game has kind of been based off the play action, having a solid run game and being able to do some things off the play action. But, you know, you look at the guy now, and he's kind of struggling here of late. You know, you kind of look at a different team with the passing game, being that, like I said, I've mentioned with Stephon's absence and seeing the adjustments being made, and it's just kind of exposing. But at the same time, I think, you know, when you look at this game as a student of the game and as a fan of the game that loves the game, you kind of can look at Kirk Cousins and tell, this is just not the guy that's going to win you a Super Bowl, unfortunately, in my opinion. I think this is a guy that can sustain you a strong season, do some good things here and out, you know, but definitely not the guy that you want to pour all your chips into. And we'll see how the rest of his career pans out.
And he already has four interceptions. If that Colts game, there were some – it's just like, come on, man. They would get a turnover, and then he would turn it right back over to the team. That is so deflating. You know, and you can't do that when you're a guy getting $28 million. I mean, you can't do that, period, as a quarterback, let alone a guy who, you know, at one point had the most guaranteed money ever for a quarterback. You can't do it. And the thing that I think is the big problem with a guy like Kirk Cousins is fantasy football, right? You look at a guy who had almost 5,000 yards passed, and he had five or six consecutive 4,000-yard passes, seasons rather, and it's like, okay, this is a good quarterback. No, he is not an outstanding quarterback. He is not one that you know, should have gotten that type of salary he got. I'm not mad the guy got his money, because by all means, go get paid. I'm just saying it doesn't – what he's done for the Vikings hasn't been, you know, in line with the money that he's got. And then this year is just an even bigger issue. This team has some things to be concerned about, because they're not effective passing the ball. They're not effective running the football. And on top of that, they are decimated by injuries. I'm not saying this is going to be a blowout for the Titans, but they really should go in there and win this game. I really don't see, you know, too many things that could happen to keep them from doing it.
I totally agree with you. This is definitely one of those games where, you know, you expect your team to go out and perform well. And as long as they do what it's told and taught throughout the week, I'm definitely expecting the Titans to go in and pull off a pretty easy victory here. You know, you don't really want to go in as a player looking at any of these games as easy victories, because right. At the end of the day, just like my coach Sean Jefferson used to say, the game still has to be played, you know, and you go out there with that mediocre attitude and thinking that you're just going to steamroll somebody just because you put the pads on today. I mean, that's making for a huge rude awakening. And you go in and you kind of are the team on the bad side of that. So you definitely have to go in, focus on accomplishing a job. But I definitely don't think this is a team that the Titans should struggle with. I think the Titans kind of should feel right at home playing with this team. Actually, it's another physical football team that wants to go out and establish the run game and be physical on defense. So I think it plays right up the Titans' alley. And as you said, due to the injuries and the things that they have going on, you know, within their system right now, I think the Titans are just primed to go in and kind of dominate this football game if they're off the leadership of Vrabel.
Right. And the thing is with this, like, this is a game where they really need to jump off to a hot start. Like, you look at last week, 24-10, the Jaguars didn't quit, right? They kept plugging away and they worked their way back into the game. I think if the Titans jump out to a lead like that against the Vikings, this 0-2 team that's on the verge of You know, in that game, you know, if they're losing like that on the verge of 0-3, that's decimated by injury, I think guys are going to – I'm not going to say they'll mail it in, but I think it would definitely, you know, make them cancel Christmas, so to speak, a bit earlier than normal, if you follow me.
I definitely agree with that, man, because when you turn on the tape from the Jacksonville team and you looked at their first week one against the Indianapolis Colts, they kind of were in the same position. You know, they kind of had been getting beat up on a little bit earlier in the game, but they stuck with it and they continued to fight, and they ended up pulling that first week game off against the Indianapolis Colts. So it was no expectation that they would come in and kind of be down early against the Titans and still fight to kind of come back in that game and make it a pressing game at the end. But, you know, you look at this Vikings team, and I totally agree with you. You just don't see the same enthusiasm on film. You don't see the same confidence. You don't see the same leadership that Jacksonville kind of had to just play without the stars or the guys that they need at the time to go out and just play football together and see what happens. I think this is a team, the Minnesota Vikings, I think they're a team that's going to possibly could have an opportunity to turn it in. You know, unfortunately, you don't have, you know, guys over there on that side of the ball. I don't think that will play through a 24-10 deficit and see what's going to happen. I really feel like, you know, they would probably just trying to get through the rest of the game and get through it healthy. I think this is an opportunity for the Titans to go out and, like you said, play some excellent football early and see what the rest of the game leads to. But I think, like I said previously, I think this plays right into the Titans' hands to go out and play physical football, but sustain drives and make it a ground and pound and agonizing game for the whole game against the Minnesota Vikings.
So that's the offense. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back, and I want to break down the three levels of the defense because I think they have standout players in each level. So we'll be right back. Nate and TD. Yo, man, I don't know about you, Nate, but I love the LOX, man. That right there.
Hey, man. Hey, man, quick story, man. LOX, listening to the LOX almost had me flip my homeboy Honda in high school, man. They used to get me so pumped up, man. We was headed to workout one day, man. He was in the car playing that LOX, and we got so geeked, man. His Honda Civic almost was on the top of his hood.
That's what happens, man. That LOX, gets you on, boy. It gets you pumped up. I wanted to definitely make sure we played that to keep that energy going. And as we get into the defense of the Minnesota Vikings, let's say this. Decimated is probably the best way to describe them. They had a linebacker get placed, Troy Dye, one of their rookie linebackers. He was placed on IR. He was a guy that they liked to use in coverage. Eric Wilson is elevated, you know, to a starter after Anthony Barr was placed on IR. You have the problems with the young corners, and these guys are young gunners. And Cam Dantzler, who is a, you know, he has a rib issue. You got Jeff Gladney, who will be mixed in. Mike Hughes was a starter. He has a neck issue. This team is in pretty bad shape, and that's not to mention Danielle Hunter being placed on IR in the beginning of the season. So there's a lot of things that have been taken away. Michael Pierce opted out. This defense is definitely not at full power. It's not the same Minnesota Vikings defense that you're used to seeing. But let's start on the back end and look at the safeties, Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris. I know you watched the Colts game. Did you notice how initially they were using a lot of too high, but then once Barr went down, you saw Harrison Smith down there in the box often?
Yeah, definitely. You have to be able to make adjustments. And what I've seen a lot of actually was a lot of adjustments to quarter half or cover six. As one side of the field is the defensive, well, the secondary is playing cover two with a high and wide safety. And then the other half is playing what they call a quarter side of the field, where the corner is kind of in a man-to-man situation on his own, but it gives the opportunity for that other safety to hang a little higher and also still play in the box. And that's what I've seen a lot of. He was being accountable in the run game. When they get in a high and low red zone, obviously they go to a single high, and they love to bring him off the pressure off the edge to kind of force, you know, the run game to exclude itself in the red zone. But obviously, Harrison Smith is going to be a guy that they're going to try to exchange in and out of the box to try to make him accountable for the run game and the injuries that they have there. You know, Anthony Harris, is especially going to be the guy that's typically the higher guy that stays deep when they go single high. But, you know, this is, as you say it, this is a team that have been plagued by injuries. Obviously, with the COVID situation and how things have set up, guys have opted out, and they kind of left this defense in a position that everybody's just going to have to do the best that they can. And I think that's, they understand that every guy is going to be have to be accountable for something else. The more as we've talked about previously on this show, the more you can do, you know, the more you can do, the more accountable you can be for your football team. And this is a situation that guys like Harrison Smith are going to definitely have to be able to do more than one thing to help his team win.
And then you look at going to personnel packages that will give you favorable matchups. 11 personnel for the Titans, I think, is something that they should use. Adam Humphries should get a lot of snaps. That's the bottom line. Yeah. Because Mike Hughes, he's their nickel guy. Again, he has that neck injury. Jeff Gladney, I felt, out of TCU, I felt he was one of the better slot corners. But right now they're putting Hughes there. I like the matchup of Humphries against him. And you look at Humphries, by the way, he has an 84.7% catch rate. Like, you throw the ball his way, he's catching it. That's where he is right now. So I think that's something that they definitely should look at. And then when you look at 11 personnel, you know, with Jonnu Smith as the tight end, this is where I think is going to be a little bit tough, because Eric Kendricks, in my opinion, you may want to say Demario Davis, but outside of him, I don't know that there's a better cover linebacker in the league. And much respect to Jayon Brown, but man, Eric Kendricks, he's a guy. He stands out to me.
I definitely, you know, look at Kendricks and
Eric Kendricks.
I'm impressed with the pass game. You know, he does a great job of doing what they ask of him. I would also like to throw that Levante David out there, man. The kid is amazing. But Eric Kendricks does an amazing job in their system. You know, they play a lot of zone. He understands the interior of the field. He understands route concept. But actually, when they go to a spread type of style offense, you know, he is putting a lot of man-to-man defense. You know, he's putting a lot of man-to-man situations. And not only, you know, does he do a good job of playing his defender, but, you know, you turn on the film and this guy's flying to the ball no matter where he's at.
Yep.
You know, so you have to be accountable for that. Just because he may be facing or defending the one guy and being a man-to-man doesn't mean he can't make a play on a guy that's in the area. He's flying to the ball. He's stripping and ripping at the ball. He's doing everything he can to make turnovers. So, you know, obviously he's been playing at this level for quite a couple years now. And I've always been impressed by Eric. He's done some good things. But like I said, he just understands their system. A lot of times on first and second down, they're going to go cover two. They may sprinkle in some Tampa two in there where that exactly. Middle linebacker kind of jumps in the center of the field in between those two safeties. But, you know, he does an awesome job of understanding his responsibility in the middle of the field and always showing up.
That was one of the things I put in the Whiteboard Wednesday breakdown this week. You know, so you're 100% right. Kendricks will at times have to have that deep middle. You heard Nate give his opinion on Eric Kendricks. I think, you know, Mike Vrabel is probably a good guy to ask about that. Let's hear what Vrabel had to say about Kendricks.
Eric Kendricks, he's traditionally been a really good pass defender. What is it about him that makes him so good in pass defense for the Vikings?
Just a very instinctive player. You know, he's quick. He's athletic and certainly has a nose for the football, whether you're running it or you're trying to throw it.
That's Mike Vrabel. That's spicy Mike Vrabel. Man, Coach was pretty spicy today, man. I know I said that before, but he definitely was. But, I mean, getting him in that mood that he was in, right, and that level of talkativeness, to make up a word, that's a pretty good explanation and a pretty good compliment of Kendrick. So, obviously, at the second level of the defense, they're – in good shape as far as one player is concerned. But Todd Davis had his first practice with the Vikings today, and he's already listed as a starter just because of default, you know. And Eric Wilson, we mentioned him. He's another one that they'll use in coverage. So I don't know, man. I again think that this is an area where the Titans should be able to take advantage of. This could be an Anthony Firkser game, in my opinion. But then let's look at the guys up front, and specifically Yannick Ngakoue. And Ngakoue has traditionally done a really good job against the Titans as a Jaguar. He's obviously, you know, with the Vikings now after the trade. What are some things that Ngakoue does well, in your opinion?
Like you said, this is a familiar matchup for Ngakoue. You know, probably out of his first two games, this will be the game that he kind of pins his ears back and is kind of more comfortable with what he has to do, facing against, you know, Taylor and our other tackles here. You know, we have an opportunity to also to face him and have some familiarity in him to go out and get some things accomplished. But the thing that I'm most impressed with, obviously, is his ability to just rush the quarterback. You know, very lengthy guy, does a good job with his athletic ability, goes out and establishes and holds the edge, does some good things off the edge of the pass rush. And I think he does a good job in the pass game. You know, I think he's not as strong in the run stopping defense, and I think that's some things that we can take advantage of there watching him on film. But obviously this guy is built for the pass. He's built to get to the passer. He's built to disrupt the pass game, and he's doing a great job of that, and the reason why he's probably up there right now.
Well, you know what Taylor Lewan says, right? His hat says it all. Run left. So yes. Ngakoue is lining up on the right side predominantly. So I think this is definitely a game where they should run left, and I think it's a game where, you know, they should be able to get that running deep offense going. So let's see what happens there. I just think that just in looking at all of this, I again, you don't go into a game overly confident, but there's nothing on here that really makes me say, you know what, they got to be really careful against so-and-so. I think that's a really good situation for this Titans team. So they have to go in there and wreck shop early, in my opinion. And then with Ngakoue, one of the other things that I think we have to mention is how he worked in tandem with Calais Campbell. You know, they did a lot of TE stunts and those type of things, and he was extra effective that way.
I totally agree with you, TD.
Yeah, and this Vikings line, I'm sorry, they don't have anybody else there that I think is really outstanding as far as someone that they could work those stunts with. So that being said, watch the Titans go out and lose, since we, you know, painted this as such a lopsided matchup. But we're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back with some reasons why the Titans should win with some key matchups. We'll be right back.
Redemption songs. Redemption songs.
Yeah, man.
Emancipate
hey,
yourselves from
I wanted to play that because, you know, that has to be what Stephen Gostkowski is listening to in the locker room after games, man. He has redeemed himself two consecutive weeks. And he had the missed extra point, came back, the game winner, 49 yards, money. Now, just to throw a few numbers out there, if you look at what he's done this year, he is the first Titans kicker in franchise history to deliver a game-winning field goal in each of the team's first two games of the season. He's only the fourth kicker in franchise history to hit game winners in any two consecutive games, joining, blast from the past here, Joe Nedney, Rob Baronis, and Ryan Succop. This guy has redeemed himself, that's for sure, but I don't think Titans fans want to be in a position for him to have to redeem himself again. What do you think?
Man, it's almost going as scripted, isn't it? But, you know, you look at Steven, man, unfortunately, it hasn't just been smooth pavement. It hasn't been, you know, the concrete road that we thought we were paving, you know, with our special teams and field goal situation this year. But he's getting the job done, you know, at the end of the day. And the job meaning getting the wins. Two games here, he's closed with crucial field goals that have helped this team win. And as much as we can be critical about, you know, quarters 1 through 3, you know, I think you just kind of have to walk away with the blessing of a win and hope that here in the near future that we find some consistency with him and know that when he steps on the field, good things are going to happen. I think they'll find their way through with him. But Steven obviously is a decorated guy in this league for a reason. He's done some good things throughout the career. But, you know, and with that position, it's almost like a what have you done for me lately?
Really,
and as long as he can win these ball games, you know, and put us in position at the end of the game, I think this is going to be a situation where you kind of deal with it, you know, leading up to the fourth quarter and that last field goal. You just have to deal with the best you can and hope that things get better here in the near future.
One of the things I always like to do when watching games or when breaking them down is find hidden points, just bonus points. And I think that's what they were able to get with that 51-yard field goal that Goskowski was able to make. You know, shout out for him, 51 yards. You know, that's not just an easy walk in the park, even though it's happening more often with kickers. To do that, that was outstanding. But what was even bigger was the play that Josh Kalu made at the end of the first half, where he had the wherewithal to fall on the ball and advance it a little bit. And Tannehill had that 16-17-yard throw, and next thing you know, they're in position to kick a field goal. When you see a team execute like that, I'm pretty sure it's obvious that that's something that they go over. And actually, Craig Aukerman, he said that that's something, different situations, you know, they go over throughout the week. And sometimes on Saturday, he said they've watched that onside kick that the Cowboys were able to do against the Falcons. He said he showed that three or four times. What does that say about the preparation level that even on special teams, how extreme it is?
This is kind of common. You know, when you look at special teams coaches across the league, these guys don't only look at their team and what they're able to do or what they need to get better at, but they also look at other teams and what they can use from these other teams and the ways that these other teams may attack them. And just the preparation and, you know, looking at this film and being prepared in itself is important. You know, my coach, once again, a key quote from my coach, Sean Jefferson, he used to always say, you know, you got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready, you know, and being prepared for a curveball or onside kick like we seen last week with Dallas and Atlanta, something that you're not typically used to seeing. Being prepared and seeing these things on film prior to your game, it sends you into the game with confidence to know that you're pretty much prepared for everything that could come your way. It puts your special teams in position to be successful. And 9 times out of 10, your special teams being successful is definitely going to boost your offense or your defense. So it's preparation is a key when it comes to special teams, knowing which guys you're going to face, knowing how guys are impacting the game on that end of the spectrum with special teams, and knowing the plays and the different schemes that teams will run against you and what you can run against those other teams to be successful in what you are trying to accomplish. So being prepared as a special teams guy and seeing everything on film is definitely important.
No doubt about it. So that's a bow. That's a wrap for last week's game. Spinning it forward to this week's game, we'll quickly run through key matchup on offense and defense. I'm going to give you the floor. You tell me your key matchup on offense.
When you look at our offense, you know, and you look at what we've been able to do, I think a lot of people have been questioning Derek's early season presence here, but I think this is a game we get on track. I think this is the game that the Titans go out and establish the run game in a positive direction and kind of stick with it. I think the Vikings are put themselves in prime opportunity for us to go out and ground and pound this game. I think Arthur Smith finds a couple key, you know, plays for Derek to get going here, and it's going to be a good game for him. I think he's looking at that 120-plus two-touchdown game from him, and I think that's going to establish this whole offense and get them on track for the weekend.
Yeah, they need to get an explosive run. I know Derek is thirsty for that to happen. He said that he's staying patient, and he's not pressing it to do it, but we all know. Horses, you know what they're meant to do, run wild. And that's what he definitely wants to do there. For me, just on defense, I'll just give my key matchup, and I think it's that linebacking group going against Dalvin Cook. And I think it's really key for them to keep him from being able to put that one foot in the ground and have that explosive run that he's capable of, because that one big play is exactly what it could take to give that Vikings offense a rush of fresh air. You know what I mean? And that's something they have to keep from happening. They have to smother them. And at the end of the day, I think the Titans win this game. I want to mention something just that when we were on the break watching NFL Network, they have a segment where they go contender or pretender. Joe Thomas called the Titans a pretender at 2-0. Steve Smith said they're a contender. So you guys know their Twitter handles. Go at them.
Definitely.
Now, and that being said, it's time to switch to one of my favorite segments. It's an opportunity to just, you know, have a little fun. Hey, Phil, can I get that music? Things that make you go ooh. Things that make you go ooh. Things that make you go ooh. All right. Things that make you go hmm. And hey, we talked about something else that, you know, made me go hmm. We talked about it yesterday. I'm going to just leave that one alone. I want to say what makes me go hmm is the surface at MetLife Stadium. This is a place that costs $1 billion to make, I believe. And then you have Saquon Barkley, you have Mostert, Raheem Mostert, you have Nick Bosa. These guys all went down, and a lot of it had to do with that turf. And here it is, $1 billion stadium does not provide a safe playing surface for million-dollar athletes. That makes me go, hmm.
Man, it's definitely a situation that you look at. There's been an onslaught of ACL injuries here of late, you know, throughout the league. And when you have a unique situation like the surface of Minnesota, you know, playing a key part in a couple key injuries, you know, you definitely look at the situation and are baffled by it. You know, you look at the opportunity where these stadiums put all this money into these stadium, I mean, these playing services, and the guys are not healthy on it. You know, I think a lot of the question comes into maintenance and trying to save money and do things that allude to, you know, longevity of these fields throughout the season. But the obvious situation is it's not safe for a lot of these guys. So we'll see if there's any adjustments made. You know, I know obviously the game itself is kind of moving towards artificial turf and kind of going back towards that way. And we'll see if there's any adjustments made with the turf.
My goodness. Time flies when you're having fun. It's all up for us, Nate and TD, a Thursday edition. We'll be back next week. You know what it is. Freaky Fridays will be back. On that note, Nate, I appreciate you. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll take it from there.
My guy, I appreciate you. I also got to leave you guys with my small prediction. Ooh. I'm going 24-7 Titans.
Uh-oh. Hey, listen, I'm not going to counter that. You got to go to ESPN.com to get my prediction.
Awesome.
All right, we're out of here. Appreciate everyone for tuning in. God bless. Good night.